Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update for the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console this morning. And we have a lot to cover with the very latest on the Omicron variant that everyone is talking about, of course, related to COVID-19. What we know so far is troubling, but we don't really know enough about it yet. Now, there's a team of scientists from 7 universities in South Africa. They've been working on it by studying 100 whole genomes of the mutation. Why in South Africa? Because the variant was first identified in Botswana earlier this month. It may have contributed to a jump in cases in South Africa. The variant has a high number of spike mutations that could affect transmissibility and immune response. The new variant is considered the most significant one yet, and scientists are working to see if it renders vaccines less effective. One scientist described the mutation as, quote, horrific in an interview with the BBC. The director of South Africa's Center for Epidemic Response and Innovation told the BBC that the variant has a, quote, unusual constellation of mutations. And as an example, the Delta variant had 2 mutations to its receptor binding domain. This variant has 10, according to that scientist speaking to the British Broadcasting Corporation. Dr. Anthony Fauci was asked about the possible spread into the United States, and here's how he addressed that question.
You know, of course, anything is possible. We don't know that. There's no indication that it is right now. It seemed to have been restricted. There were some cases that originated in South Africa and that went to Botswana, and people who traveled and found out they were infected, and one that had gone actually to Hong Kong. So there's a lot of travel.
And here's how it was described by the British Health Minister, Saeed Javid.
The early indications we have of this variant is that it may be more transmissible than the Delta variant, and the vaccines that we currently have may be less effective against it.
Now, President Biden is imposing a travel ban on 8 countries in southern Africa. That travel ban will go into effect on Monday. You may recall when former President Trump enforced a travel ban on travel from China that he was labeled a racist and a xenophobe. President Biden imposing a travel ban this coming Monday. Now, in New York, a very interesting development on Friday, the new governor of New York is Kathy Hochul, and she issued a state of emergency order on Friday in response to the Omicron variant. The emergency order intended to increase hospital capacity in New York. It will last until at least January 15th when it will be reassessed. The state will utilize a surge and flex system, which allows the Department of Health to limit non-essential and non-urgent hospital procedures in situations where a hospital has less than 10% staffed bed capacity. Those procedures in New York taking effect on December 3rd. Obviously, this is something the news has got up front. It is the lead story on all of the cable news networks over the weekend, and obviously we will follow it very closely here at WMAL in the days ahead. We're at 6:14. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It's great to have you with us this weekend, and we will be joined by Jennifer Harper coming up in a little bit. Some interesting poll numbers on how Americans are feeling about things these days. Also, we'll talk with Jim Trusty. He is our legal expert. And we're going to discuss the outcome in the Ahmaud Arbery trial in Brunswick, Georgia. Of course, 3 defendants found guilty there. And we'll go into some of the details of the trial with Jim. And there were some very odd things taking place in that trial. We'll talk about those in a few minutes. From the defense attorney, some odd statements and probably didn't help the defendant's cases at all. And we'll get into that impact with Jim this morning. Also coming up, we'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Vladimir Putin seems to be rattling the sword again at the Ukraine border. The president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, has said that he has uncovered a potential plot for a coup that would have happened in early December, and we'll have more on that this morning as we talk to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Also, some congressmen made a stop in Taiwan. The Chinese government not thrilled about that, and we're going to get some of the political ramifications from that with Tony. We'll also talk with KT McFarland about that this morning. So we've got an action-packed program coming up. John Gizzi joins us, of course, the White House correspondent at Newsmax on Newsmax.com. And we'll talk with John this morning about some of the developments, including a very, very strange political move for Louis Gohmert. That's right, the congressman from Texas, a good buddy of Larry O'Connor's. Well, Larry, we're going to have to get Larry to find out what's going on with Louis, because Louis's making a move out of the Congress. Ooh, it's a big surprise. And anyway, we'll get into that with John Gizzi this morning. So lots to cover here on the Saturday Morning Update. LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. Here's the latest traffic info I have for you. In Arlington on the GW Parkway southbound near the Roosevelt Bridge, I have a report of an accident there. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. All lanes are clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Now, if you're traveling between the two Beltways in Prince George's County, no delays on the BW Parkway and on 95 north and south. On Route 50 in Prince George's County between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, everyone's at speed on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. And in Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not going to hit your brakes northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, breezy, and cool on this Saturday. High temperatures into the mid and upper 40s, so a chilly start to the weekend. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy skies, lows back in the 30s across the region. As we head towards your Sunday, partly sunny, it will be warmer. Temperatures back into the mid and upper 50s. Have a little disturbance rolling through Sunday evening. Not really expecting anything as far as precipitation from it, but yes, breezy winds will be back as we get towards Monday of next week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 617 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
618 now on the Saturday Morning Update. It is Thanksgiving holiday weekend. That means you've been traveling, possibly a longer trip. Maybe you visited somebody and had to fill up the tank once or twice. Well, if you did, it was sticker shock again at the gas pumps. Now, you may remember several weeks ago, the Secretary of Energy was asked about gasoline prices and what, you know, what she could do about it, what the U.S. could do about it. This was the response she gave on Bloomberg surveillance. This was several weeks ago, the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm.
In Sturgis, Michigan, it is $2.89 a gallon. I guess that's better than in California. What is the Granholm plan to increase oil production in America?
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. Would that I had the magic wand on this. As you know, of course, oil is a global market. It is controlled by a cartel. That cartel is called OPEC, and they made a decision yesterday that they were not going to increase beyond what they were already planning.
Well, she said she couldn't wave the magic wand, but President Biden did wave the magic wand this week. He released 50 million barrels of oil from the U.S. oil reserves. Now, 50 million barrels is about enough gasoline and oil for 3 days of consumption in the U.S., so not exactly going to be a big impact, but here's how he explains it.
Today, I'm announcing that the largest ever release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to help provide the supply we need as we recover from this pandemic. I also want to briefly address one myth about inflated gas prices. They're not due to environmental measures. My effort to combat climate change is not raising the price of gas or increasing its availability.
Two problems with what the president said there. Isn't it amazing? It's like a 12-second clip. No, I'm sorry, it's a 25-second clip, but there's two issues with it, 12 seconds apiece. So the first issue I have with that, it's the largest release in history. Does that instill any confidence in you that this president, the mess he's made in the last 11 months, that he has to do the largest release of oil in history? I mean, of all the things we've been through, the hurricanes, the fires on the oil rigs, but no, he's releasing the most ever. So what does that tell you about the competence level? And then the other thing he put in there is that none of his policies on climate change have anything to do with this. Well, I beg to differ on that. As you may recall, we were energy independent during the Trump administration. We don't seem to be energy independent anymore, at least according to Jennifer Granholm, because we have to rely on OPEC. So 25 seconds and two of those misrepresentations, once again, from our president. Now, I mentioned to you that 50 million barrels is about 3 days' supply. Most people in the media this week were aware of that. I wasn't really aware of it until it was brought to my attention by the media. However, there was somebody that wasn't particularly aware of it and what it meant to the problem. So this is our Secretary of Energy once again, Jennifer Granholm, when she was asked about barrels of oil are used every day in the country. Wouldn't you think the Secretary of Energy might know the answer to that question when she is at a press briefing at the White House with the president, who is announcing that he is releasing 50 million barrels of oil? Now, wouldn't you think the Secretary of Energy would be able to put that in perspective as to what impact it would have on the consumption of oil and what it might mean to American consumers? She was asked the question at the same press briefing with the president.
There are various figures about this, so I'm curious if you know, how many barrels of oil does the U.S. consume per day?
I don't have that number in front of me, sir.
Okay, she doesn't know. She didn't have that number in front of her. That's a number that you might want to know prior to the press briefing without having it in front of you. And if you don't know it, somebody in your office should have made sure it was in front of you. More evidence of just the incompetence that is rampant in this administration. Now, you may have heard this week that a judge has reversed the president's reversal of the Remain in Mexico policy that the Trump administration had in place. So President Trump had the policy where the migrants coming across the border would not cross the border. They would wait in Mexico prior to hearings and prior to process. Well, the Biden administration reversed that, of course. Well, a judge reversed the Biden administration's reversal. Are you confused? Well, here's how Jim Jordan looks at it, the congressman from Ohio.
March was the highest month on record for illegal crossings until April. And then April was the highest month until May. And then May was the highest month until June. And June was the highest month until July, when it was 212,000. And it's dropped a little bit, but not much, frankly. So this administration's made a mess of the border. We went from a secure border to complete chaos.
All right, so that's Congressman Jordan. Well, what is all this going to mean in 2022? You have the congressional elections coming, and Democrats are scrambling, even though they won't necessarily admit it, but they are scrambling. You've probably heard of Jeff Van Drew. He's a congressman from New Jersey, former Democrat. Here's how he assesses how the Democrats are looking at all of this, whether they're saying it outwardly or not. Here's how he sees them viewing it.
I don't think they want to have to explain why the president is screwing everything up. I don't think they do want to have to explain why less than a year ago everything is fine and everything is in complete disarray now. I don't care what party you are. You may try to say it's good if you're a Democrat. Down deep inside, you know it's not.
Wow. Down deep inside, you know it's not. Whew. 6:25, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk with Jennifer Harper and Jim Trusty coming up next. 6:28, Saturday morning update, WMAL. So you had a very nice Thanksgiving dinner. Black Friday kicks in. The stock market typically has a strong day on Black Friday. Well, not this time around. They're blaming it on the COVID-19 variant detection, the news story that's dominating the news. That's where they're putting the blame. But U.S. stocks did suffer some of the biggest single-day declines of the year on Friday. The market was down at one point, more than 1,000 points. It closed down 905, down 905 points on the New York Stock Exchange on Friday. So a mess on the stock market now. That's the worst day since October 20th of last year. A little rough tumble there on the market, and a lot of the advisors will say, well, when the market's down, it's a great buying opportunity. But not everybody said that yesterday because they don't know what's going to happen on Monday. So obviously we'll keep an eye on things. But typically your Black Friday is a good day on the stock market, but not this year. Could it be that inflation might have a little something to do with the confidence and the economy in general? Might that have an impact on how people are feeling? Well, President Biden was out shopping yesterday in Nantucket. Probably didn't get to the Dollar Tree store there, and I don't think so. He's probably in a nice fancy shop on Nantucket. And he was asked by reporters about inflation. So this is Joe Biden talking about inflation on Friday.
I talked to the Fed about a whole range of things, from monetary policy to inflation. And I have confidence that the appointees that I've made, and I'm going to have, excuse me, three more, are going to reflect that concern.
Well, I'm glad he's got confidence. I'm not sure that I have confidence, and I'm not sure that you have confidence either. And here's another. I just love the misrepresentations that come out of this administration. I mean, in the Trump administration, they called them lies, right? You know, everything's a lie from Trump. But in this administration, it's misrepresentations. Try this one. This is President Biden trying to convince us that we actually have more disposable income, even though the gas prices are through the roof and inflation is soaring.
And if you continue and combine the wage increases we've seen with the direct relief my administration has provided to middle-class families, the typical middle-class family's disposable income has actually gone up 2% this year, even after accounting for higher prices.
Whose numbers are those? Are you up 2% this year? I have no idea where they get the numbers. Probably the same place they get the numbers on the Build Back Better plan and the infrastructure package. Remember, it's going to cost $0. Not going to cost anything to spend like $5 or $6 trillion. Where they get the numbers, I do not know. We're going to check the news next, then we'll talk with Jennifer Harper. Stay with us on the Saturday morning update. In the news, authorities say that shots were fired near a food court at a shopping mall in Tacoma, Washington. The Pierce County Sheriff said at least one person was struck and injured at the Tacoma Mall. Happened after 7 o'clock on Friday. Similar incident happening outside of Raleigh, North Carolina at a shopping mall yesterday. One person injured there. The world is racing to contain the new coronavirus variant. It's potentially more dangerous than the one that had fueled waves of infection on nearly every continent. The World Health Organization panel on Friday naming the variant Omicron classified it as a highly transmissible virus of concern. It's the same category that includes the Delta variant. Much of the world imposing immediate travel bans on visitors from 8 countries in southern Africa where the new variant was discovered. The U.S. putting its travel limits into effect on Monday. The White House says agencies and airlines need that time to put the restrictions into effect. And U.S. health officials say that Merck's experimental COVID-19 pill is effective, but they raised questions about its safety during pregnancy. The FDA posted its review on Friday ahead of a public meeting next week where outside experts will debate the drug's benefits and risks. If the FDA authorizes the drug, it would be the first pill for U.S. patients infected with the virus. All FDA-authorized drugs currently used against coronavirus require an IV or injection. This would be the first pill. It's 6:34. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Good morning. In Arlington, on the GW Parkway southbound near Roosevelt Bridge, there is an accident reported there. On 66 in Fairfax County, you should find all lanes clear on the eastbound side and on the westbound side. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, I just checked out the traffic cameras. All lanes are at the posted speed limit on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 95 from the Beltway to Fredericksburg, you're at speed northbound and southbound. And in the district on 295, 395, and 695, I have no reports of any delays there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, breezy, and cool on this Saturday. High temperatures into the mid and upper 40s, so a chilly start to the weekend. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy skies, lows back in the 30s across the region. As we head towards your Sunday, partly sunny, it will be warmer. Temperatures back into the mid and upper 50s. Have a little disturbance rolling through Sunday evening. Not really expecting anything as far as precipitation from it, but yes, breezy winds will be back as we get towards Monday of next week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:35 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and thank you for spending part of your Thanksgiving holiday weekend with us. And we thank Jennifer Harper for doing that as well. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning.
It wasn't such a good afternoon on Friday as the stock market down 900 points on Friday. And what does that mean in terms of where we would have been on Black Friday? I mean, there's always the excitement with the Black Friday sales, and it's when the retailers go into the black. But what is the kind of expectation moving forward?
Well, the expectations aren't so well. A lot of Americans are very skittish right now about all the rising prices and the fact that their ritual of buying stuff and having a good time doing that during the holiday season has really gone down. And I've got some poll numbers, of course, for you. And 77% of Americans now say that inflation is affecting their lives on a very personal level. And this is just as the holiday season kicks in. This is a Yahoo News poll that was released this week. And they point out that Americans of all political persuasions expect prices to shoot up over the next year, and that's according to Terry Jones. He is the editor of Issues and Insights. That was a very interesting read, and they did a whole analysis of these findings. And just a couple more numbers, 84% of Americans, and that includes 94% of Republicans and 81% of Democrats, they agree that all the prices on all the stuff that we rely on, gasoline, food, other household products, are going to rise and keep on rising. And they also pointed out that the pessimism about all this increases with age. So if you're like over 50, over 65, whatever, and you're a little more pessimistic about this, they point out, because we've already been through this before, they say it. Is it just that the older people remember the 1970s traumatic inflation? And it's kind of hard to say, but that's kind of where they're putting all of this. And one last thing here, if you're wondering if COVID-19 and all these hair-raising variants are affecting shopping behaviors, well, of course they are. And according to Simon Kusher and Partners, that is a Boston-based global strategy and marketing consulting firm, Rick, they say that during the first holiday season of the pandemic, can you believe we're going into a second one, but they said 60% of consumers said that the pandemic even then had affected their shopping behavior. That has already gone up to 78%. And with all this stuff about the new variant, new, as in NU, we've got to watch those numbers and see what happens.
You often share polls with us, and many of those polls show that voters seem to feel that Republicans are a little bit better at handling the economy and things. What are you finding in terms of some stats to back that up?
Oh, boy, this is something to make all Republicans happy, because this is actually the Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics. And according to the month of October, it finds that states that either have a Republican governor or a Republican state legislator are leading the nation in employment matters. And happy for all of us, the Republican National Committee did all of the work on these numbers. And here's what they said in a very informative message to me. They said the data revealed that 17 of the top 20 states for jobs recovered since the coronavirus pandemic began are led by Republican governors. 18 of the top 20 states have Republican-controlled legislatures. It also found that 16 of the top 20 states' employment rates are led by Republican governors. 17 of those states have Republican-controlled legislatures. And in addition, Rick, 10 states with the lowest unemployment rates of all are led by Republicans. And the 8 states with the highest unemployment rates are all led by Democratic governors. And according to the Republican National Committee, they say it's more evidence of what we already know. Republican policies deliver jobs and opportunity, and Democratic policies instituting mandates and reckless spending don't work. One thing is for sure, having a Republican governor is definitely something millions of Americans can be thankful for. And if you want a job, move to a Republican-led state. So interesting numbers here.
So the Wall Street Journal has been pretty outspoken on their editorial pages recently, talking about the Democratic Party. What they have to say about that?
Oh, my gosh. Every time there's a new phrase that comes out in the news media that seems like a keeper, I always point it out. And the phrase of this week are the kamikaze Democrats.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, really. This is a very handy little phrase. It was coined by the Wall Street Journal editorial board this week. And they are describing Democratic lawmakers who must now face this very daunting reality of the multi-trillion dollar tax, the climate and entitlement spending bill, and all that goes along with it. And here is what the Wall Street Journal said. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi marched her majority off a cliff in 2010 with votes on Obamacare, and now here she has done it again. They say the 81-year-old Mrs. Pelosi is almost certainly retiring after this Congress, and this vote is a legacy project for her. But her younger members will have much to explain in 2022 as they defend this gargantuan, destructive, and unnecessary bill. Again, this is the Wall Street Journal, and they were citing all the expensive particulars of this particular legislation, as we already probably all know ourselves. And they say Mrs. Pelosi promised Democrats she wouldn't make them vote on a bill before the Senate agreed to it, but in 2010, she's done that again. They're now going to have to defend provisions that couldn't pass a Democratic Senate. No wonder Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy spoke on the House floor for 8 hours. He knows that the Democrats were voting to make him Speaker. So not very nice news there from the Wall Street Journal, but also very specific, I thought.
You know, for as much time as America spent listening to Rush Limbaugh, did they really get to know Rush Limbaugh, sort of the behind the scenes and some of the personal side of Rush Limbaugh? Well, there is now an opportunity to learn about that, I understand.
Boy, there really is. And this is a new book that's come out this week, and it's really, I've looked at it, it's really a great book. And this is written by James Golden. You already know him as Bo Snerdly, and he was a longtime executive producer for the late Rush Limbaugh, just a loyal guy. And he has written a new book called Rush on the Radio. And this is like a salute to everything that Rush did and the incredible loyal audiences that he had over the years. But it's also a very, very meticulous kind of chronicle of the program itself, a lot of behind the scenes of what went on with these very creative people back there, but very, very disciplined. And this is what Mr. Golden wrote. He said, Rush was the first national media figure of consequence to openly and daily call out liberals for being a destructive force in the American body politic. And he did so by creating a bond with his audience, the likes of which never existed before. I thought that was pretty significant because, as you and I know, well, being in radio for a while, there really, there really wasn't anyone that has done that lately. And according to President Trump, he said this is a beautiful tribute to Rush, his patriotism and his character told in a way that only James Golden can. And if you're wondering about Mr. Golden right now, he is an afternoon host for WABC AM in New York City, so he's on the air. And this is a book from All Seasons Press. This is a new publisher, and they say they are centered around the best writers, politicians, and pundits in the conservative movement. So Mr. Golden, Bo Snerdly is right there. The book is called Rush on the Radio.
It is Small Business Saturday after Black Friday, which was really a tough one for the stock market. So you've come up with a small business outlet for some very interesting reading. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and this is also good if you're looking for something for a holiday gift that you're buying for somebody who's got everything or doesn't like anything, whatever it is. And yes, indeed, let's certainly recognize our small businesses today. If you got a small business in your neighborhood, well, go buy something there. But anyway, let's go back to this potential gift. And amid supply chain problems, there is the Seawolf Press. And they offer 350 classic literature titles with all of the original and often amazing and incredible illustrations and cover designs. And we're talking about Jack London, Jules Verne, Charles Dickens, Mark Twain. They're books for children, books for Black history, all kinds of stuff. There are hardcover and paperback versions of these books available, and they really are amazing covers on them, so forth. And again, the Seawolf Press explains these are not photocopy versions of old books, but rather newly formatted editions that contain the text and illustrations from the first or early editions. Most also have the original cover from the first edition or from beautiful paintings. The text has been properly formatted with an easy-to-read font, similar to those that were used 100 years ago. If you're curious, there are some of these books that are available on Amazon, but the best place to go is just seawolfpress.com, seawolfpress.com.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, and have some happy shopping on Small Business Saturday. And thank you very much, as always.
My pleasure, Rick. Have a good day, everybody.
6:46, Saturday Morning Update. WMAL, we'll talk with Jim Trusty next, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
I'm checking out the traffic cameras on the Maryland side of the Beltway, and I'm seeing all the lanes clear, no construction and no crashes on the inner loop and on the outer loop. If you're traveling between the two Beltways in Prince George's County on the BW Parkway or on 95, if you have cruise control, go ahead and set it. All lanes are clear north and south. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're at speed eastbound and westbound, and at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, breezy, and cool on this Saturday. High temperatures into the mid and upper 40s, so a chilly start to the weekend. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy skies, lows back in the 30s across the region. As we head towards your Sunday, partly sunny, it will be warmer. Temperatures back into the mid and upper 50s. Have a little disturbance rolling through Sunday evening. Not really expecting anything as far as precipitation from it, but yes, breezy winds will be back as we get towards Monday of next week. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:47 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update, Thanksgiving weekend holiday. Thank you for spending some time with us. Jim Trusty joins us. Of course, he is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You spent a lot of time on the various cable news channels this week talking about the Ahmaud Arbery trial and verdict in Brunswick, Georgia. Jim, did anything surprise you about the guilty verdicts for the three defendants?
Well, not particularly. I mean, the general optics of this case were just devastating, you know, and there's a real contradistinction from how you look at the videotape when in the Rittenhouse case. But in this case, the general imagery of these men in a pickup truck with one standing in the back and both of them armed, you know, chasing down a young Black man who, again, they didn't really know whether he had committed burglaries or not. They just made the assumption that this young Black man must have been the guy that broke into these houses that were under construction. So, yeah, the starting point was a pretty devastating one. The videotape was pretty damning, even though you did see some measure of resistance from Arbery during the incident. I think the issue that was toughest for me was probably Roddy Bryan, the person in the second car, and created the videotape that was so damning for all three defendants. And the issue is essentially whether or not there was enough time for him to really fully conspire or to be part of this team. And the jury found that he did. I thought that was going to be a tough issue because, you know, people don't move like chess pieces, and they were accusing him of blocking in Arbery, but they also had video showing him moving at like 2 miles per hour. So his attorney did a nice job in a closing argument that really brought out the distinction between him and the McMichaels. And I thought that was going to be the interesting part of the story in terms of a jury verdict. But I have to say the jury did draw distinctions between each of the defendants. Yes, everyone's guilty. Everyone's facing a life sentence and even the possibility of no parole. But they did acquit on various counts that showed gradations between shooter and non-shooter, and then McMichaels and Bryan.
So each of the defendants is convicted on multiple felony counts, and now the Department of Justice is going to pursue a hate crime case based on information that this may have been racially motivated. What more would that do in terms of the incarceration or sentence of these defendants?
Sure. Probably not a thing. The state of Georgia has a distinction that the judge has to make at sentencing as to whether it's parole eligible life or not. If it's a life without parole, then a federal trial is entirely symbolic. If it is life with parole, as I understand it, you still have to serve 30 years before you're eligible under a crime like this. So we're talking about, you know, men being in their, I think, late 80s before they have any potential eligibility. So I think this is really another one of these examples of the new Department of Justice philosophy of chasing headlines and chasing political causes when it's entirely unnecessary. You know, normally the doubling up of a civil rights case comes when there's been some abject failure within the state system. Most people can remember the LAPD case with Rodney King, where the officers were acquitted and the Department of Justice decided, well, this is a circumstance where we're going to double up and take another shot at him. And they were able to get convictions for Stacey Coons and some of the other officers based on their conduct that night. This case does not cry out for that treatment at all. And, Rick, I have to add, there's another wrinkle to this that people don't really recognize, and that is this. If you go to trial on a federal case after the state case, any attorney worth their salt is going to be looking for inconsistencies in discovery. What was turned over in the federal case versus what was turned over in the state case. Now, part of that helps you as you defend the federal case, where you can say, Judge, I know that there was other information turned over in the state case that we didn't get. But there's also the possibility of sabotaging the state conviction because the feds turn over something that either wasn't known or wasn't turned over in the state case. So there's a lot of room for mischief from the defense side to see if they can do something that actually hurts those very serious convictions, those very highly celebrated convictions that we had the other day. And that's the real downside, besides resources, of a assertion of federal jurisdiction at this juncture.
Jim, there were some comments from the defense attorneys during the trial and during the closing arguments that some of the pundits were saying may have had an influence on the jurors when they really had nothing to do with the facts in the case or the defendants.
Well, I think if anything, it was probably a backfire. I mean, the point that I saw and scratched my head over was when one of the McMichaels attorneys was talking about whether or not the victim was really a jogger, and she was describing his clothes, and then she just kind of threw out there and his long, dirty toenails, which is something that would have been evident from the autopsy, I suppose. I don't know that that was racist per se, but it was certainly gratuitous. It was certainly kind of a nasty aside. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. It didn't address any real issue in the trial. And I have to think in today's day and age, you know, if that was supposed to be some sort of dog whistle, as they call it, for, you know, racists to leap to the forefront, you know, it didn't work. And I think more likely there was jurors that said, what the heck was that? It was just a very degrading, demeaning moment. And I know that Arbery's mother apparently reacted to it quite visibly, and as anyone would. So, not the best tactic. I don't think it was a poorly tried case. I think that the tactical decisions, the cross-examinations, and the presentation of witnesses was all pretty well done, and a judge that had a pretty firm hand over that courtroom. So I don't know that any of this should be chalked up to attorney performance, but that was certainly a bit of a low moment for the defense.
Another kind of odd twist in this was that the prosecutor who initially looked at this case found the defendants justified in killing Arbery, and they said they were carrying out a citizen's arrest for neighborhood break-ins when Travis McMichael shot in self-defense. That Georgia district attorney was charged for allegedly mishandling the murder case, was booked into jail on Wednesday. Johnson had been the community's top prosecutor at the time of the murder. She was indicted by a grand jury last week. She's facing a felony charge of violating her oath of office and a misdemeanor count of obstructing police work. Is this something you see often?
No, you don't see it often. It's really borderline historic. And look, I think there's a lot of fair questions that have been raised in both these high-profile cases, in Arbery's case as well as in the Rittenhouse case, about the conduct of the prosecutors, whether they're making charging decisions based on evidence or other things. Well, this certainly suggests that she tried to bury this case, perhaps because of her friendship with the ex-police officer that was charged. But it's going to be very interesting to follow it. I don't suspect that it's overcharged, but I'd like to really know what the specific evidence is before weighing in too heavily at her expense. But the last time I can think of a prosecutor getting charged for essentially fraudulent decision-making was Mike Nafong in the Duke lacrosse case, where he was running for election in Durham, knew that he wanted to at least get through the election before dropping the charges, and did exactly that. It turns out he knew they were innocent, but he kept them charged and some of them initially in jail until he could get through the primary season of his election. So she's in select company, but it might be well-earned.
Jim Trusty, a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and we're going to have Jim back in the 7 o'clock hour. Want to get his read on the smash-and-grab crimes we've seen around the country and sort of the whole breakdown in the prosecutorial system, and that's coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll also talk with John Gizzi, and we'll get kind of a political side of this new COVID variant. That's all on the way. Stay with us right here on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station.